And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm your host, Bill Frank. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is optimism. Each of my guests brings an optimistic, upbeat attitude and approach to his or her topic. My next guest has roots in gospel, folk, country, and rock and roll music. He's navigated the music scene from obscurity to the pinnacles of popular success, eventually finding his own groove back in folk, country, rock, where he began. Chris Hillman was one of the original members of the Byrds, which in 1965 included Roger McGuinn, Gene Clark, David Crosby, and Michael Clark. Chris Hillman is the youngest of four children. He grew up in North San Diego County, and he's credited his older sister with exciting his interest in country and folk music when she returned from college in the late 1950s with Folk Music Records. Chris soon began watching many of the country music shows on local television in Southern California at the time, such as Town Hall Party, Spade Cooley, and Cal's Corral. Chris's mom encouraged his musical instrument interest and bought him his first guitar, but shortly after he developed an interest in bluegrass and fell in love with the mandolin. In mid-1964, Chris considered quitting music and enrolling in UCLA, but he received an offer from his former manager and producer, Jim Dixon, to join a new band, The Byrds. Chris was recruited to play electric bass guitar, although he never picked up the instrument before. After the Byrds, he joined the Flying Burrito Brothers, Stephen Stills Manassas, Souther Hillman Furay Band, the Desert Rose Band, and Chris Hillman and Herb Pedersen joining me in the studio. Hi, Chris. How are you today?
Hey, Bill.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Well, I'm glad to have you in the studio. Thank you so much for being in. You, along with your bandmates, the Byrds, you were really credited as the originators of country rock music. Of course, that morphed into your band, the Flying Burrito Brothers. Also, it had influence on Poco, the Eagles, Dan Fogelberg, and even Pure Prairie League. So as you take a look at that, what resonates with you about the country music scene that you started out in?
Well, you know, first, Bill, they labeled us folk rock because we had taken a Bob Dylan song, Mr. Tambourine Man, and had a number one single around the country. And it was mostly a journalist's way of how do we categorize this, you know. But it wasn't a stretch for us because we did come out of folk music. We were not a rock band, the Byrds. We learned how to plug in our instruments. How does it affect today? I think the Flying Burrito Brothers were really the first alternative country band and the outlaw band. They didn't play by the rules. We couldn't get on country radio back in 1969, and we couldn't get on rock radio. It was quite a conundrum. And then as FM expanded, they'd play a lot of album cuts then in the early 70s. Of course, we got play then, but... it's so funny, Bill. We're far more popular now than we ever were then, which I'm the last guy, the last living member. Sadly enough, I am the last living member of the original band.
Well, that is very sad indeed. I did not realize that Roger had passed away. Roger?
No, I'm talking about the Burrito Brothers. No,
I'm sorry,
okay.
I'm sorry, Burrito
Roger,
Brothers.
No, Roger and the Byrds, we'll go back to the Byrds.
Okay.
pardon me. Roger McGuinn is healthy, performing as a solo artist. David Crosby, he just emailed me yesterday. He's on an extensive tour with Crosby, Stills, and Nash. We all get along, and the three of us are the surviving members of the original five.
Oh, I see.
The two fellows have passed away. There we are.
All right, so the Burrito Brothers, they're unfortunately, everybody but you has passed away. That's
exactly.
Very sad.
It's very confusing, but I know. I mean, it's confusing in the chronological order of the bands and all that stuff.
But I just, for the record, I did buy your albums, and I have them in my record collection. Yeah, I did. I'm one of those people.
Bless your heart.
Oh, that's great. My guest is Chris Hillman in the studio. So, Chris, I'm going to take you back to the Byrds just for this one. I want to touch on it because it was very, very different in the 1960s for a rock song. You recorded Turn, Turn, Turn with Byrds, of course, in 1965. Mm-hmm. That got its lyrics from the Bible, Ecclesiastes 3:1, mm-hmm. to be exact. There are so few rock anthems today to do so. Now, Pete Seeger wrote it, of course, but why did the Byrds cover that particular song?
You know, it's interesting. We were on the road on a tour, and Roger McGuinn was really the most seasoned musician of all of us. He had been an accompanist to the Chad Mitchell Trio, the Limelighters. He had worked with Judy Collins, hence Turn, Turn, Turn. Judy Collins recorded Turn, Turn, Turn in 1965. folk version, very beautiful version. And I remember we're on the road driving through the Midwest, and Roger's back in the back of the bus. He says, "What do you think of this song?" And I'm just the bass player. I said, "Why don't you ask Crosby or something?" He plays Turn. I said, "That's beautiful." I said, Let's cut it. And we did, and oddly enough, our manager, Jim Dixon, said, "I wouldn't do that song. It's too black and white." Meaning, philosophically, what Samson, who wrote the scripture, was saying, the time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap. So there was no gray area, which is literally what life boils down to, is a real choice there, black and white, good and evil. We did record it. We had a number one huge song. It's probably the best remembered song in the Byrds catalog is Turn. Roger sang it at my wedding 33 years ago.
Goodness, congratulations.
I've performed that song a lot, either in church situations or funerals even. So it's an amazing song.
Well, it really is, and it resonated with people in the 1960s. Yeah. Where the 60s were that sort of a time where things were black or white.
Exactly.
You were either pro-war or against war. You were either a hippie or you were a conservative. You were either...
And what Pete Seeger did was he had remembered this beautiful scripture in Ecclesiastes 3. King Solomon, not Samson. I was completely wrong. Everybody, forgive me. King Solomon, King David's son, wrote the verses to Ecclesiastes 3, "To everything there is a season." Pete took that and he put this wonderful melody with a repeating chorus. "To everything, turn, there is a season, turn, a time for everything under heaven." And really didn't mess with the original scripture at all.
No, and it turned out, as you said, to be one of the most popular rock anthems of the 1960s.
I think so.
My guest in studio is Chris Hillman. So, Chris, what drives you musically? Because others may have retired at your age. You know, what motivates you to continue to perform, continue to record?
I love performing the way we do it now, acoustically, where it's down to the pure essence of the song and of the music, and where we don't have this giant band, and we're not assaulting the senses of the audience. Most of the audience have grown up with me. So I love doing that. And Bill, the toughest part is travel. But I think that transcends everybody's life. Traveling now is not fun, whether you're an attorney going on a case back in the East, whatever. It's just a hard thing to do. But so that gets to me. But I do love performing, and I will do it as long as people want to hear it. And if they don't, and if it's sort of time to stop, I had a great time. Believe me, I had a great time.
Well, in the words of Dan Fogelberg, you know, the performing is heavenly, but the traveling is hell. And that's the way he said it.
Or as Buck Owens would say, it's the getting there.
So very true.
Simplified that one, yeah.
So very true. My guest is Chris Hillman. So, Chris, in your more recent music, you've teamed up with Herb Peterson. So how did you guys meet? How did you become band members? Sort of tell us the story about your musical collaboration.
I met Herb when I was 18 years old in 1963. He had a group, he had grown up in Berkeley, California. He came down to Los Angeles with his bluegrass band. And I came up from San Diego County working in bluegrass. And we met each other, became fast friends, so we really grew up together. We did sessions off and on. Herb was the session guy. I mean, he's the greatest session singer out there, I think, still today. We would cross paths over the years. In the 80s, we ended up, speaking of Dan Fogelberg, we ended up putting a little group together to back Dan on a tour. Herb and I had both worked on this album of Dan Fogelberg's called High Country Snows. So we went out on the road for 3 weeks with Dan. It was Herb and I and John Jorgensen and Bill Bryson, all to become members of the Desert Rose Band. I had no intention of getting back into a band. I had been working acoustically again. This is the early 80s. I sort of was done with electric music, and it just fell together. This Desert Rose Band fell together. We hired an old friend of mine, J.D. Manus, to play steel guitar and Steve Duncan on the drums. And I didn't even think we'd get a record deal. We got a record deal. The first single out of the box was top 20 country, old country song, Ashes of Love. The second single was a song called Love Reunited that I had written. And It was Billboard number 6, and I get the call from the manager or somebody. I said, that's not supposed to happen to me. I'm the bass player. I'm the guy in the band. No, you have a top 10 single. And from there on, Bill, we had a string of number 1 hits and stuff, and it was a good running outfit. The consistency rate on stage performance-wise was up in the 90 percentile. I mean, just great musicians. So, hence, here we are. We broke up in early 90s. The only band that I've ever gotten together with again and played. So occasionally we go out every year or two, we'll do a couple of shows, you know, and that's it. It's not a career move. It's because we like each other. That's an interesting concept.
It is, and particularly in the age of bands, because bands come and go. Yeah. You know, you're in them, you're out of them, and pretty much that's an end of your life, life cycle. You move on to something else. Mm-hmm. What are some of the differences of being in a band versus just performing by yourself? What are some of the dynamics there, and why do you keep coming back to it?
Well, let me just add this, or preface this with, I was very shy. If you ever watch an old Birds video on YouTube, an old one, I'm the guy in the back playing the bass, is not smiling and scared to death. And it was a long apprenticeship, okay? It was a long apprenticeship to where I learned how to sing, had the confidence to sing, and really worked on that and began to be comfortable in front of audiences. It's been an interesting time. Working in a band is a tough one. You're together. My best analogy is every 5 guys holding a paintbrush, but you're all trying to get that Mona Lisa smile. You know, and when you get the brass ring, being working together that many people, it's like if you had 4 other guys here behind your control booth and you're all sort of trying to do the same thing. It's fun for a while, and then it isn't fun because things happen and personalities clash. Outsiders come in, try and split things up. Working by myself or working with Herb is a joy. Herb's a great guy to work with, you know. Sometimes we go out Desert Rose Acoustic. So it's the original 4 guys at back, Dan Fogelberg, Herb and John Jorgensen and Bill Bryson and I. We get along great. But someone has to be the platoon leader. You have to have it that way. It can't be this wonderful, we're all going to work this together. It doesn't work that way. You've got to call the shots. You have to be a fair guy. And this is something I learned, you know.
My guest is Chris Hillman. Chris, I want to change gears with you, if I can, for just a minute, because back in May, you were paid quite an honor. You were in our nation's capital, and you performed at the International Orthodox Christians Charities to celebrate their 2 decades of faith-based humanitarian work. You also attended a reception on Capitol Hill earlier that same day. So tell us about the event and your involvement with the International Orthodox Christian Charities, if you will.
Well, I got asked, it was an honor, they were doing their 20th anniversary. The IOCC is a charitable, international, all over the world. And the interesting thing, there's the statistics on them, excuse me, it's 90% of the money they raise goes to the recipients. And 5 to 10% is their overhead. That's a pretty good thing.
That is.
Most of the charitable groups can't match that. They do great work all over the world, whether it's in Africa. It's not just for Orthodox Christians. It's for everyone, whether you're Buddhist, Hindu, Jewish, whatever. And they're wonderful. They're very committed and devout in the faith. So here we are, and we had this wonderful event, and the Archbishop is there. And I met all these great people. Just, I had the most interesting talk with this priest from Baltimore. I can't remember his name because he was such a wonderful guy. But anyway, that was great. And then they honored me. And what do you think I sang there? Turn, turn, turn.
Well, that made perfect sense.
And the toughest song is the national anthem, a cappella.
I've
done that a couple times. I used to go and do it at Bonaventure High School games. Rick Ruffinelli would be calling the game, and I'd come up there and I'd sing the anthem. And I really started to learn it and learn how to do that. And so, I opened the thing with the national anthem, and then I sang Turn, Turn, Turn. And I had all these kids behind me on stage. It was fantastic. And they're wonderful people.
No, that is, and that's quite an honor. I'm still trying to get over and get my head around the fact you can sing the national anthem a cappella. That is incredible.
It's a tough song because it's three octaves, and so you have to start low. For me, it's G, the key of G. Oh, say, you almost have to, if you really get that low note out, or you'll never make the end.
That's so true. It's very true. So. Words of wisdom from Chris Hillman.
The congressional... was it that we went to thing was honoring the IOCC and a lot of the congressmen that were Greek Orthodox or Greek culturally. It was very funny. I'm sitting there with a suit on and Nancy Pelosi's running in the door and she looks at me and does that smile and I smiled at her, but in her mind she's going, I wonder who this man is. He's important. I know him. I just couldn't. So she goes up, and she actually said something decent. I thought she was quite articulate. And I lean over, and then she leaves. And I said, oh, I just blew it. My wife says, what? I said, I should have got a picture with Nancy Pelosi just to have it.
Just to have one, yeah.
Not quite on her page. We wouldn't agree on anything. But it was a great moment.
But it is one of those honors. And she would have been thrilled to be photographed with you as well.
I doubt she knew who I was, and it didn't matter. But it was just that... so funny. He's going 100 miles an hour through him.
There was that glimmer of recognition, though. My guest is Chris Hillman in studio. So, Chris, you and your wife, Connie, you've lived here in Ventura County for quite a while. You were born in L.A. You moved to northern San Diego County, which in and of itself is a beautiful place. You could live anywhere in the world. Why did you choose to come here and live in Ventura County?
When Connie and I were married, we had a long courtship. It was really nice. And we got married. She lived in Los Angeles. I had a little house on down in La Jolla, California. And a friend of mine married us because I really wasn't able to get married in the Greek church at that time. And a friend of mine, Jet Thomas, who's a Baptist minister and was dean of a freshman at Harvard for years, a theologian, great friends with Emmy Lou Harris and Linda Ronstadt and myself and various people. We all met him through Graham Parsons. It's interesting. But Jet married us. And then we got married in the Greek church later. So Jet's greatest bit of advice, and I give this to any young married couple who are successfully, individually successful. And he said, the first thing you two need to do is to sell your homes and buy one together. Well, what's that mean? It means that you don't never want to have that base of power in a sense of, because you're going to have problems in the marriage. You're going to have an argument. You say, what's my house? Get out. You know, it's a great thing. So end of the story. We both sold our houses. And I said, I want to live at the beach. But I said, we can't afford it. I said, the last great beach town, which is similar to me growing up in Del Mar in the 50s and Encinitas and all these towns, is Ventura. So we moved up here in 1980. Lived at the beach on the lanes.
Oh, that's great.
Time. Yeah. And we lived there for 10 years. And the kids were babies. And I said, and we were moving up to Ojai. And I said, you know, they're going to really get mad at me when they're teenagers to know that we lived at the beach, and especially our son. And we never had, but we. So, yeah, we were up in Ojai for a while. And we missed Ventura. We came back. It's a wonderful town.
It is. And it's a great testament. My guest in studio is Chris Hillman. Chris, just to sort of wrap it up, I want to ask you, what's the highest compliment somebody can pay you regarding your musical career as you look back over the decades?
You know what? It has happened a few times, and even from somebody I admired who was so influential was Buck Owens, the late Buck Owens. And I remember performing at one of his birthdays when he was alive. And I'm walking down, and he says, Chris, you're a good singer, good singer. And you go, wow, you know, for somebody to say that. And I'm the shy guy. I never sang. I was a terrible singer. It was the last thing I learned how to do. It was terrible for the first 20 years of my career, which is now 50 years in December. But when you get complimented on your voice, which is something I struggled with, having the confidence to get up and sing, when somebody compliments you, you know that. That's a wonderful thing.
And coming from Buck Owens, it could not be a higher compliment.
That's right.
Chris, it has been a delight. My guest in studio has been Chris Hillman. If people want to learn more about you, learn about your upcoming concert tours and so forth, where would you direct them to go?
I would say go to chrishillman.com. It's a great website. And a local firm, ZestNet, does the site. They do a great job.
That is good. Yeah. Chris, thank you so much for being our in-studio guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.